Blog Talk Radio.
Son of a bitch! What's up, everybody? Today's a good day. Today is a good day. Just feels good. In New York, it's just gorgeous outside. And then I'm in a good mood because Bernie Sanders won West Virginia. Now, I mean, look, like I said on the night that after he lost New York and then he lost Pennsylvania, his hope is just to stay in striking distance and then try to flip superdelegates. But still, whenever he wins, I just get happy. I get happy when he wins. And every single state where Bernie has won, there's been like at least a split second where I thought, I'm moving there. So West Virginia was in my mind last night. Remember when, I think Bernie won Kansas too, and when he won Kansas, I started thinking, what's the matter with Kansas? Absolutely nothing. Kansas is fucking spectacular. I love Kansas. So I might be moving to random parts of the country because Bernie wins in these random parts. So I love all of you. All right, I got a lot to talk about today. Not only are we going to discuss Bernie Sanders' victory, but I have just absolutely fascinating exit polls for you, which paint a really interesting picture about the general election. You really, really, really do not want to miss this story, and luckily for you, it's the first story. So, as you're sneaking in listening to this show at work, or whatever it is, you'll be happy. As we move along here, we also have new research on just how disliked Donald Trump is. The answer is he's very disliked, but something notable is left out of the funny poll, which really explains how disliked he is. We'll discuss that as well. And then later on in the show, oh goodness, Ted Cruz will not go away. He won't fucking leave. Leave, Ted, leave. And Obama's actually going to do something historic in that he's going to Hiroshima. For those of you who don't know, that's the place that the U.S. nuked to smithereens, or one of the places, I should say. So there's an interesting backstory to that. And I have some strong opinions on it. Perhaps you'll be unsurprised to learn that. But let's go ahead and start here, and I want to do that with Bernie Sanders' West Virginia win and what we can learn from the exit polls, because there are many, many lessons to take away from this. So Bernie Sanders dominated the West Virginia primary yesterday, and I wanted to take a look at some Democratic exit poll results to see what we can learn from them moving forward and what this teaches us for the general election. So ABC News reports here, 6 in 10 voters said they were very worried about the direction of the nation's economy in the next few years, by far the highest level of economy worry in a Democratic primary this year, far above the average, which is 40%. All right, so that's very telling right there. Bernie Sanders wins, and he wins in a state where people are super worried about the economy. 6 in 10 said that versus the average in Democratic primaries is 40%. So they continue here. A majority in the state thought trade with other countries takes away more U.S. jobs than it creates. By the way, that's a verifiable fact, versus only a little more than a third who said it creates more jobs. These economically aggrieved voters not only were far more numerous in West Virginia than in other Democratic primaries, they also were much more supportive of Bernie Sanders here than elsewhere. So again, you're beginning to see this picture get painted in front of you where when the shit really hits the fan, people go, yeah, no fucking around. Where's Bernie Sanders? That's my guy because I know he's actually going to look out for me. All right, let's continue. Independents accounted for a third of voters in West Virginia in preliminary exit poll results, so it was an open primary. Well above the average to date, 22%, Sanders took 6 in 10 of these voters. See, now this is, again, a really, really important point, because what it shows you is, and this has been the case all along from the very first primary we had, if you had a system that allowed, that was an open primary system, so independents are allowed to vote, in some states you're allowed to have, get crossover votes from the other party too. When you allow that, guess who does better unfailingly? Bernie Sanders. And I don't know if you guys know this, but in the general election, that's kind of how it works. Independents are allowed to vote, and you could be a member of whatever party you want to be, and you could do a crossover vote. When you allow that, Bernie Sanders does better. It's only when you really, really control it and honestly rig it and make it rigid, where only Democrats can vote for Democrats and independents can't vote, and no crossover votes, and you got to do registration a month before. Only when you do stuff like that does Hillary have a gigantic advantage. Yet again, that is quite telling. All right, let me give you more. Roughly 6 in 10 voters in preliminary exit poll results say honesty or empathy are most important to their vote, not experience or electability. So, yet again, who wins on the front of honesty and empathy? Bernie Sanders by a landslide. Hillary's fallback arguments of, yeah, but experience and electability, people go, not nearly as important. And then here's my favorite fact. Some people could hear this next fact and go, well, I don't like that fact, but I actually do like it, and I'll explain why. Here it is. West Virginia Democratic voters were among the least liberal so far this year. Fewer than half said they were liberals versus an average of 62% in previous Democratic contests. So when you ask the Democratic voters in West Virginia, are you liberal? They don't like the word liberal. They're like, no, I wouldn't call myself a liberal. No. But those people overwhelmingly voted for Bernie Sanders. Now, why do I like that fact? You can make the case, well, hey, they're ignorant, yada, yada. And there's an element of truth to that in the sense that they don't know their political science terminology, but many people don't. But what I take away from that is people just listen to what he says, and they're not categorizing it in, oh, that's liberal, oh, that's progressive, oh, that's moderate, oh, that's right wing. They just go, they hear it, and they go, I like it. I don't care what the fuck you label it. I'm not going to label it. I hear what he says. I know he's looking out for me. I know he's on my side. I like it. I like it. I like it. So you've now set up this situation where Bernie Sanders not only gets, as should be relatively obvious, the Democratic base that is more liberal and more progressive, and they say that, but now you have in many states people who say, okay, forget the labels. I just know that that guy's looking out for me, and I'm going to vote for that guy. I don't call myself a liberal, but I'm going to vote for that guy. So that means Bernie Sanders gets the base, and he gets the people who are moderates. So obviously we need Hillary Clinton in the general. No, see, that makes no sense. Hillary Clinton loses independents to Bernie Sanders across the board, and now she's losing people who are less liberal. Which, again, if you're just rigid about the definitions, you would think, well, she's more conservative than he is. That's unquestionable. So, therefore, she should get those voters. No, they don't like her. They don't fucking like her. They don't like her. Everybody who smugly thinks, like, Hillary would destroy Donald Trump in a general. Wait until you get a load of this fact. 44% of Bernie voters said they would vote for Trump in the general election if need be. 44%, nearly half of Bernie Sanders voters in the West Virginia primary said, I'll vote for Trump over Hillary. Iceberg dead ahead. I'm telling you guys, this is real. I went back and forth on this at one point, where first I said, because some people in the Bernie or Bust movement, they were described as they're either going to write in Bernie, they're going to vote for Jill Stein, or some of them will actually vote for Trump over Hillary. When I first read that, I was like, I don't know about that. I don't think they'll go for Trump. I think they'll either write in Bernie or vote for Jill Stein, or maybe just sit out the election or whatever it is. Now I get the sense, not only from these numbers, but from other numbers, and honestly from anecdotal evidence of people tweeting at me and people saying in the comment section, for example, on my YouTube videos, like, no, I'm not kidding. Like, I'm a Bernie Sanders voter. I'm a diehard Bernie Sanders supporter. I love Bernie Sanders more than anybody. But if he loses, I will vote for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. So you don't think this phenomenon is real? Oh, you got another thing coming to you. There are definitely voters who would go to Donald Trump if Bernie Sanders is not the one who's running in the general. So, again, for all the smug, condescending people in the Democratic establishment who are so utterly convinced that Hillary Clinton can't be defeated. It's a tap-in. It's a gimme. There's nothing going on here. She'll destroy Trump. Jeez, you have another thing coming. You have no clue. You have no clue. It's a coin flip election. That's what it is. Is it possible she beats him? Sure. But is it also totally possible that he wins? Absolutely. He gets independents to vote for him. He over Hillary Clinton, even though Bernie gets it over him. He gets crossover voters to vote for him. And in a general election with Hillary Clinton as the Democratic nominee, you know what's going to happen? Turnout's going to be low. You know who wins when turnout is low? Republicans. So you want to roll the dice? Hillary's your candidate. You don't? You want a country that's actually going to become a social democracy and have FDR 2.0 and a new New Deal and a better situation for middle-class Americans where they get health care, they get college, we allocate our tax money better? Well, then you vote for Bernie Sanders. So in other words, if you really, really care about the issues and a better future, then you vote for Bernie. Okay. All right, now we're going to move along to more bad news for Hillary. You know, do you have any idea how frustrated Hillary's people are that Bernie Sanders is still in the race? Dude, they are losing their shit. I mean, if you listened to the pundits last night after Bernie won, it was all just condescending, you know, they're super dismissive of him. They're like, come on, why are you getting in the way? Step out of the way, damn it. So here we go. Hillary Clinton and the new thing that she must worry about and that I think will actually just happen. The Hill has some bad news here for Hillary Clinton. They say Republican operatives are scouring the country for transcripts, notes, or secret recordings of Hillary Clinton's paid speeches to Goldman Sachs in hopes of finding damaging material for the general election. Oh boy. They continue here. Republican opposition researchers have taken matters into their own hands, aggressively seeking any information about the speeches, including from Goldman employees who were in the room. A GOP operative said the following, quote, finding and releasing the transcripts would be a heck of a way to outflank Hillary on her left in a general election and stop Bernie supporters from voting for her. Just mail the Goldman Sachs transcripts to every Bernie supporter. There's your targeted mail program right there. I won't say it won't come out at some point. It's like a bomb that's going to go off in the general election. Okay, guys, make no mistake about it. If indeed these transcripts do leak, and it looks like they may indeed leak, that would be the equivalent of Mitt Romney's 47% video. You remember that? Where Romney, in a private event, was caught on camera saying that 47% of the country, they're lazy moochers, and they're never going to take their responsibility for themselves, so you write them off. We don't need to represent them. We need to try to get the votes of the other people. Yeah. And then, you know, the people call into them. They're like, oh, this is a bad person. This is somebody who literally does not give a fuck about half the country. And obviously, in his mind, is the Democratic half of the country. And he's also just massively ignorant and wrong because the people who net receive more federal tax money are in red states. The blue states are actually bigger net taxpayers. So your idea of the lazy Democratic moochers and parasites, you flipped it on its head. That's not true. And by the way, many of the people who net receive tax money, they're disabled, they're senior citizens, they're veterans, so you're disrespecting these people? No, but that's the thing. He's so out of touch. He's so super rich, and all it is, I love the rich. I want to protect the rich. I only want to represent the elites, and that is exactly the kind of stuff that's on those tapes from Goldman Sachs. Okay, we've had some leaks from some people who were at the event at the time when they spoke to people, spoke to the media afterwards, and the thing that they said was, oh, her main line of argument was all of this banker bashing it's nothing but scapegoating, and it's so wrong, and it's so inaccurate, and it's so stupid for people to dislike Goldman Sachs and to dislike the bankers and to be angry at Wall Street. It's not your guys' fault. You're the victim. You're the victim. You're telling me if that leaks in a general election, that is not going to suppress the Democratic base vote for Hillary? I got news for you. They're already kind of suppressed, and they're already downtrodden. I see it myself. You know who mostly makes up the secular talk audience? The Democratic base. This is the pulse of the Democratic base in our audience. And they're like, fuck her. If you release those transcripts and get the actual words coming from her mouth, as is likely, well, then it's like, oh, game, set, match. Forget it. Forget it. It's writing in Bernie in the general or voting for Jill Stein or not voting at all or some people, like we said in the last segment, they are just going to go and vote for Trump, and they're going to say, I'm doing it because I want to burn this motherfucker down. This is the liberal Democrat in the general election is somebody who just kneels at the feet of people on Wall Street and says, oh, I love you. I worship you. Let me kiss your feet. Horrendous. It's horrendous. So this is the person you want to represent the Democrats? Guys, I said it before. I'll say it again. You have now set up a general election where? The Republican establishment, the Republican candidate is going to portray himself as more anti-establishment than the Democratic candidate. And also, there's a good argument that the Republican candidate is going to portray himself as to the left of Hillary on foreign policy and war. The Democratic base is not going to want to vote for somebody who's rah-rahing war and intervention and who's more pro-establishment and defends Wall Street more. She just fucking called Bush donors. When she should be reaching out to Bernie supporters to try to get them to come over to her, what's she doing? Snubbing them and literally calling Bush donors and saying, I represent your values more than Donald Trump does. This is a recipe for disaster. She has arrogance oozing from every pore of her body. Where are they going to go? Where are the Bernie supporters going to go? They're going to vote for me anyway. Fuck them. Now let's call some Wall Street donors, some Bush Wall Street donors. When these transcripts leak, if these transcripts leak, and I put that at 50-50 right now, it's 50-50, it's a coin flip, it would be an absolute disaster for the Democrats, and Donald Trump would go immediately to being the favorite in this election. As of right now, I'm already more cautious than other people on the Democratic side. I think it's already a 50-50 election. You flipped a coin. Hillary's only up 6 points on average. And they haven't even really started going after each other yet, and I think Trump will improve when that happens. I already think it's 50-50. But if these transcripts leak, Trump becomes the favorite, like that. So go ahead. Be happy about your Hillary Clinton candidate. Or Bernie Sanders is still in the race. You could still go out there and vote for him in huge numbers and get him within striking distance. And if there happens to be an indictment or something of the sort, you know, maybe there's a Hail Mary shot, he flips some superdelegates, and he gets the nomination. And guess what the numbers are with Bernie Sanders versus Trump? Bernie is up, on average, 13 percentage points in a general election race against Trump. Because you take away all of Trump's advantages. How he says now, oh, I'm to the left on foreign policy, oh, I'm anti-establishment. Here's who you're not to the left of on anything. Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is to the left of you on foreign policy. And he is certainly more anti-establishment than you, so all your arguments, down the drain, bitch. So Bernie Sanders is the solution. Hillary Clinton is the problem. All right, let me squeeze in one more before we take our first break. And this one will be Donald Trump and how disliked he is. So we have some new research out from Public Policy Polling about just how disliked Donald Trump is, and I must admit, it's pretty hilarious. So they say the following. He's less popular than lice, and not only is that the case, he's less popular by a whopping 26 percentage points. Good googly moogly. He's less popular than jury duty by 22 points. He's less popular than root canals by 11 points, the DMV by 10 points, hipsters by 7 points, traffic jams by 7 points, used car salesman by 6 points, Nickelback by 5 points, and he beats cockroaches by 4 percentage points, and hemorrhoids by 6. So he's only more popular than cockroaches and hemorrhoids of all the things I just named there. Now, this is something that people on the left have been having fun with for the past few days because the poll was released, I think it was 2 days ago. I think Rachel Maddow had an exclusive, and she did this whole segment where she said, laughing, Trump is so stupid. And, you know, others have made the same point online. Social media is buzzing about it and whatnot. And, again, I agree, man. This is all very funny and probably kind of true, too. Except there's one issue that I found with the poll. They didn't ask the same questions about Hillary Clinton. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they did, okay? But I wasn't able to find it. I looked at a variety of different sources. I went all the way back to the original public policy polling poll, and I did the, you know, the search to find the words like cockroach and traffic jams and stuff. And the only thing that came up was it was Trump, and it was those things. Now, again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed it. In fact, I think I may have missed it because it seems inconceivable that you don't ask the question about the other candidates. If I did miss it, please, you guys, send it to me, and we'll correct it, right? But I didn't see it. So if indeed they didn't do it about Hillary Clinton, I wonder why. Why wouldn't they do it about Hillary Clinton? Here's my hunch. You would get very, very similar results. So Donald Trump has, I think it's a record, 65% unfavorability rating. Or that's not, I don't think that's the right term. It's not unfavorability. It's I think it's just disliked. Like people don't like him 65%. But Hillary Clinton is the second most disliked at 56%. So you would get similar numbers. And here's what I view as the most devastating fact. Hillary nationally right now, when you average out all the polls, she's only beating Trump by 6 points. So that means she's right in league with used car salesmen. Because used car salesmen are 6 percentage points more popular than Trump right now, too. So congrats, Hillary! The inevitable candidate is like a used car salesman. And she's also now in a statistical tie in Pennsylvania and Florida. And she's losing by, I think it's 4 in Ohio, which means that in Ohio, Hillary Clinton has the same approval rating as cockroaches. Donald Trump beats cockroaches by 4 percentage points in the PPP poll. In Ohio, Donald Trump is beating Hillary by 4 percentage points. So I do this entire segment to let you guys know, beware the smug liberals who are just, again, they're so convinced, like, oh, Donald Trump, he's so stupid. Look at him. What a joke of a person. And, again, like, I agree with all that. Nobody leads the charge in making fun of him more than me. The guy has a fucking ferret on his head. He's just a serial liar. He's a crazy person. He bankrupted his companies 4 times as he pretends like he's the best businessman on the planet. The list goes on and on. He rails against outsourcing. Meanwhile, he outsources. His ties are made in fucking China. There's this great clip of David Letterman calling him out. He's like, as Trump is railing against China, he hands him one of his ties. He goes, read the back of that. What does it say? Made in China. So the guy's a clown. The guy's a joke. But you know who's also those things? Hillary Clinton. Nobody likes her. We don't like her. We don't like her. She is a massive sellout. She is the establishment. She's a shell of a human being. She is walking, living, eating, breathing corporate cash. Okay, $3 billion her and Bill have raised over the years from various special interests. They've raised over $100 million in speeches alone. That's just for them. Never mind super PACs, never mind campaigns and stuff like that. We don't like her. You are running the one Democrat in the country against Donald Trump who has a decent chance of losing. Yes, this is a coin flip election, and if you think any different, you're dead wrong. Okay. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we got Vice President Joe Biden making an appearance in the show, which is super rare. He did an interview with ABC, and I'm going to go after him. And then we have some old video of Trump that was dug up by Right Wing Watch, and he said some questionable things on the issue of debt. That's weird, isn't it? All right, stay right there, guys. We got all that and much more. We'll be right back. We're all living in America.
All right. Let's go to Joe Biden
and see what he has to say about Hillary Clinton. I don't think you'll be surprised at this. I don't know. Maybe you will be. Who knows? Maybe you thought he was savvier than he is. Vice President Joe Biden spoke to ABC News, and he made some rather arrogant pronouncements.
Bring up the next president. We're all anxious to see
who
that
she is. I feel confident that Hillary will be the nominee, and I feel confident she'll be the next president.
I don't get it. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. I know Obama made a similar joke in the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but I don't get me wrong. I think he believes it, and I think everybody in Washington believes it. He did the joke where he said, you know, we all are waiting to see who the next president is. Next year, the new president will be up here. It's anybody's guess who she'll be. How the fuck can you be so sure? But I know the answer, because they live in Washington, so they're literally in the Washington bubble. And when you talk to everybody there, Donald Trump is just the biggest joke on the planet. But here's why you shouldn't be thinking that right now, because everybody thought he was the biggest joke on the planet before the first debate. And then everybody thought he was the biggest joke on the planet after the first debate when he won the first debate. And then they thought he was the biggest joke on the planet after the second debate when he won that, in a landslide, by the way. Everybody thought the same thing after the third debate and the fourth debate. He won all those. Everybody thought it was the same after New Hampshire. And he won that in a landslide. They just kept moving the goalposts every step of the way. Nah, you know, Donald Trump, he'll drop out after the first debate. Oh, he won. Oh, he'll drop out after Iowa. Oh, he's staying in and he's up gigantically in New Hampshire. Oh, that's all right. He'll drop out after Nevada. Oh, he won Nevada. And it just, it goes on and on and on and on. And now the same people who've underestimated him from day one are the same people who are like, ha, Hillary Clinton will, I'm confident she'll be our next president. Based on what? Even if you go by all the polls for a general election matchup, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, you have a 6 percentage point lead for Hillary Clinton. The plus and minuses on these polls are like 3 or 4 percentage points. That's not a lot. That's not a lot at all. Never mind the fact, new polls just came out yesterday. She's damn near tied in Ohio. No, I'm sorry. He's winning in Ohio, which is a hugely important swing state for the election. He's winning in Ohio. She's losing Ohio. And then in Florida and Pennsylvania, they're damn near tied. When anybody tells you today that it's going to be a cakewalk for Hillary in the general, look them in the eyes and tell them you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You don't know what you're talking about. And then again, I haven't gotten into the same spiel I've given you what feels like every day now on the show to warn you about Trump, which is that in a general election matchup, Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, Trump gets the independents. Hillary does not get the independents. The only person who can beat Trump with independents is Bernie Sanders. So Trump gets the independents. Trump also gets new voters, by the way. Nobody talks about this. Now, granted, they're old white voters, but guess what? They count. But he gets new voters. And then also with Hillary, she disheartens the Democratic base. And when you dishearten the Democratic base, turnout is low. Low turnout ends up favoring the Republican. I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton is going to lose. I'm saying I don't know and you don't know, and it's a closer race than you think it is. That's the claim that I'm making. Now everybody says, oh, yeah, but Hillary Clinton gets women overwhelmingly and Hillary Clinton gets minority voters. All that is true. But in order for the Democrat to win, probably the number one thing in today's day and age that the Democrat needs to win is a massive voter turnout among millennials. Hillary Clinton does not get millennials. Bernie Sanders crushes her in millennials. So if Bernie wins independents, if Bernie wins millennials – if Hillary's strongest support is honestly for minority communities in red states, it's a recipe for disaster because she's not going to win those red states in the general anyway. So in every conceivable, every imaginable way, she's poised to fuck this up. look at what she's been saying on foreign policy. She just did a rally where she attacked Donald Trump, not for saying, hey, we're going to kill civilians in the Middle East, as Trump did say on Fox and Friends and as we made an ad about. She attacked Trump on foreign policy by saying he's isolationist. You're going to use Republican talking points against him. That's what idiot Republicans say against Democrats who make sense on foreign policy. Isolationist. Isolationism is just the smear word for the wildly popular non-interventionism that 57% of Americans agree with, according to a recent Gallup poll. That's what she's attacking him on? So he's to the left of her on foreign policy and may be clearly in the general election. He's going to be to the left of her on Wall Street and on some economic issues and on, you know, corporate money and corruption. Iceberg dead ahead, but everybody in Washington, including Joe Biden, smugly, arrogantly, oh, please, obviously, I'm confident she'll be the next president. You shouldn't be that confident, because right now, it is a coin flip, and the more time goes by, it's certainly possible that at certain points during this election, Donald Trump could be the outright favorite. Okay. Now we go to Ted Cruz. You ready? Time for fun with Cruz. Ted Cruz called into Glenn Beck's radio show, and they came up with this cringeworthy scenario. Let's watch.
Say, we need to watch and see. Ted, are you leaving the door open to if Nebraska were to somehow miraculously choose you tonight?
Pat's going for the Hail Mary.
Is there, I mean, if that happened, would you consider getting back in the race?
Well, I am not holding my breath. My assumption is that will not happen. But listen, let's be very clear. If there is a path to victory, we launched this campaign intending to win. The reason we suspended the race last week is with Indiana's loss, I didn't see a viable path to victory. If that changes, we will certainly respond accordingly.
I don't know about you, Nebraska, but I take that as a yes.
I take that as a big yes.
Get to the polls now.
Oh, no. Ted is like herpes. He won't go away. What are you doing, Ted? Oh, you're so embarrassing. First of all, Glenn Beck's show has roughly 13 listeners. Every time I cover him on the show, I feel kind of bad that I'm giving him more publicity than he's gotten in the past few years. His The Blaze empire is crumbling underneath him. There's been various reports of that. And Ted, like, this is his home, man. This is his people. He needs a fucking talk radio show, and he's out there like, oh, yeah, you know, if somehow they vote for me in Nebraska again, as long as there's a path to victory, we'll be in it. Dude, let it go. They're just not that into you. And I've maintained from day one, and I still stand by this, if you thought Donald Trump is bad, Ted Cruz is way worse. Ted Cruz, if Donald Trump is, as people have portrayed him and as some of his positions have kind of shown himself to be, a fascist, Ted Cruz is a theocratic fascist. Ted Cruz actually wants to implement Christian Sharia. Ted Cruz actually believes the Bible. He's a Kool-Aid drinker. He thinks Rush Limbaugh has brilliant policy positions. He wants to cuddle up with Glenn Beck and give him a hand job. What? Did I say that out loud? I didn't mean that. I did mean that. But here's the other takeaway from this segment. I have zero doubt. No doubt whatsoever. It's 100% certainty that Ted Cruz is going to run for president again. And I'm going to give you the prediction just like I did the other day when we covered the story of him dropping out of the race. Ted Cruz not only is going to run for president again, he's going to do significantly worse the next time around than he did this time around. He's done. He is Rick Santorum 2.0. That's what he is. Except somehow, I don't know how this is possible, Rick Santorum was slightly more likable as a person. You know you're fucked in your political career when Rick Santorum appears like a more genuine person than you do. Okay. I'm having fun here, man. I'm fucking cruising. All right, now let's go to the Trumpster for some old comments he made. God, I have so many devastating quotes on this. Has anybody else noticed that Glenn Beck's chin seems to be consuming his face? Every time you see the guy, it's like he gained 6 pounds. And I'm not one to talk, because there are times I've fluctuated in weight before, but, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, he's starting to kind of look like Jabba the Hutt. What are you doing, Glenn? I guess you tend to eat a lot when your media empire...
Not, it was never really an empire, but it crumbles in front of you.
Some old video of Trump was dug up by Right Wing Watch, and he has some curious thoughts here that are out of lockstep with Republicans on the issue of debt.
What are some of the first steps, the message that you begin to send forth to empower yourself and begin that transition?
Well, first of all, you mentioned the word debt, and nobody knows more about debt than I do, because I owe billions and billions of dollars, but I'm a professional. I mean, I know what I'm doing, and it worked out very well. I negotiated a couple of deals with banks and this and that, but you know, I had a lot of friends who went bankrupt. You'll never hear from them again. I never did that in the early 90s when I was in trouble. I owed billions and billions of dollars, and in a certain way, I love debt, because in good times, there's nothing better than debt. In bad times, it comes back to bite you. So we talk about debt, we talk about the assets and the liabilities of debt, and generally speaking, it's a liability, especially if you're not a really skilled professional.
Wow. If any other Republican candidate had made those comments on debt, they would be donezo. They would have no shot, because you just vocalized a position that is flat out blasphemy in a Republican primary. I mean, one of the things the Republican Party, they've always had the rhetoric on debt, and conservatives have always said about debt, like, no, that's the last thing we want ever. And they always attack the Democrats as the party that, you know, is horrible, and they increase the debt, and the Republicans are better. And Trump himself now goes back and forth and says, like, oh, yeah, too much debt in the country. Got to blame the Democrats. Debt. It's so bad, it's so bad. Now, historically, that's actually not true. The Democrats have been significantly better with the debt and the deficit than Republicans have. Republicans have been worse as they talk a better game on debt, and they say, we care about it the most. Well, your actions show that you're worse. But look at what he said. He said, in a certain way, I love debt. Again, imagine any other Republican said, I love debt. They would be done. They're out of the Republican primary. They would get zero votes. He also, in classic Trump fashion, just lied there and said, I never did any of that, talking about bankruptcies. That, oh, I have friends who went into bankruptcies. You'll never hear from them ever again. I never did any of that. Dude, he did that with four of his companies. Now, at the time, he didn't do it with four yet. He probably did it with one or two of them at the time. But he's still a liar. Like, you still did it. And you're certainly not against it in principle. You did it multiple times. So he's just shameless. And when he says the stuff that he says. And then I have even more devastating admissions from him here. So he also said, and this is recently, that was an old clip, this is recently here, he said, I'm the king of debt. So not only does Donald Trump love debt, he's also the king of debt. More, I've borrowed knowing that you can pay back with discounts, and I've done very well with debt. Now, of course, I was swashbuckling, and it did well for me, and it was good for me and all that. And, you know, debt was sort of always interesting to me. Now we are in a different situation with a country, but I would borrow knowing that if the economy crashed, you could make a deal. What? Donald Trump would like to treat the country in a similar way to how he treated his businesses, where he overleveraged them, he took on too much debt, he filed for bankruptcy, fucked over all the workers, and then he took the money and ran out the back door. Dude, he's telling you, yeah, I would do something similar. I'd make a deal. That's what he's talking about. That's the kind of deal he's talking about. He's saying that with the country. Hey, if the economy crashed, first of all, what? A president, a person who wants to be president, if it crashes, what do you mean if? You're supposed to prevent the crash. That's why you're in there. Well, no, if it crashes, I'll make some sort of deal. Well, the deals you made for your companies were horrific for the people in the company. It would be no different for a country. And then you ready for this? Again, the cherry on top here, which shows how silly Donald Trump is. According to the Tax Policy Center, nonpartisan, quote, Donald Trump's proposal, his tax proposal, would add $11.2 trillion to the national debt by 2026. So yet again, the party, and in this case, the person who says, oh, yeah, we hate debt, you know, we're great with it, we'll limit it. It turns out, no, he said he, quote, loves debt. He's, quote, the king of debt, and his proposal would add $11.2 trillion to the national debt by 2026. What happened, big guy? Every single thing that Republicans and conservatives have said all along on this issue, the orthodoxy that has been just rushing through their veins all along. Now a charismatic guy comes along who's an authoritarian who says, yeah, flip that on its head. I love debt. I'm the king of debt. My tax plan adds $11.2 trillion to the debt, but you're going to vote for me anyway. What do they do? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm going to vote for you anyway. Even though you just voiced opinions that I could not disagree with more, and one of my main issues is debt. I want to limit the debt, limit it, fiscal responsibility. You come along and say, I'm wildly fiscally irresponsible because it's a cult of personality, and because you're an authoritarian, I'm going to bow down to you. And I don't give a fuck that you yourself said you, quote, love debt, you are, quote, the king of debt, and your tax plan is $11.2 trillion to the national debt. They are such immense hypocrites, it's hard to even wrap your mind around it. Okay. God damn, man. Yet again, I said it before, but I am fucking cruising here. All right, so now we're going to talk a little bit about President Obama and what he's going to do here in terms of going to Japan and going to where we dropped the nuke. Very important story. All right, here we go. The Associated Press has an interesting story about a powerful gesture here from Obama. He's apparently going to visit Hiroshima, where we dropped a nuke. So they say, eager to heal old wounds and galvanize new generations, President Barack Obama this month will be the first sitting American president to visit Hiroshima, where 7 decades ago, the U.S. dropped the devastating atomic bomb that ushered in the nuclear age. By visiting the Peace Park near the epicenter of the 1945 attack, the president hopes to reinvigorate efforts worldwide to eliminate nuclear weapons. But in a sign of the extraordinary political sensitivities attached to the gesture, the White House is going out of its way to stress that Obama will not come bearing an apology. All right, this story here is quintessential Obama. This is Barack Obama 101. This is the school of Barack Obama through and through. So what do I mean by that? Half measure. So President Obama, in typical President Obama fashion, he generally leans towards the right side of stuff, but he's not going to go all the way because he's afraid of the outcry from the idiot brigade in the country, namely the far right wing. So just to give one example, healthcare. Yeah, I know healthcare reform is the right thing to do, but we can't do Medicare for all because that's divisive and the right hates it and the health insurance companies hate it and they'll attack me. So we're going to do reform, but we're going to do the worst reform humanly possible, which is a free market solution which keeps the private health insurance companies intact. And by the way, they're the heart of the problem. So it's a half measure. Oh, yeah, I'm on the right side of things, but I'm only going to go like 8% of the way of what I should go. So, and now, please, tell me how great I am afterwards. Again, Obama 101, Wall Street reform. Yeah, okay, we know we need to do something because we can't just leave it how it is. We're not the Republicans with more deregulation and this and that, but okay, we're only going to do Dodd-Frank, which doesn't even bring back Glass-Steagall and doesn't address the heart of the problem, but it's window dressing reform, and it does like 4 good things. Okay, I did it. Historic Wall Street reform. Everybody pat me on the back. Now it's, okay, yeah, we dropped some nukes and killed over 100,000 civilians, and that's a tragedy, and it's horrible, and anybody with a fucking basic conscience and a brain goes, ooh, I think we can apologize for that, but I'm going to go there and I'm not going to apologize because I don't want to piss off the right wing, so I'm going to go and that's enough, right? But I'm not going to apologize. Oh, tell me how historic this is. Tell me how great I am. Tell me how I'm bridging gaps here. No, I'm not going to tell you that because guess what? This is what he never gets. Or maybe he does get it. He doesn't care. They're never going to not attack you. They are never going to not attack you. They're always going to attack you. So if they're going to attack you no matter what, why not do the right thing anyway? But maybe you don't want to do the right thing. You know, maybe that really is true. But at least in this case, I tend to think he does want to do the right thing, but he's so afraid of the outcry. Because you remember all along from the very beginning, what did they say about Obama? Now, it's not true because Obama didn't do this. But they said, oh, he's going on an apology tour for America, apologizing for America, apologizing, apologizing, apologizing. Well, number one, he didn't. Number two, still maybe he should have. If they're going to attack you for bullshit anyway, why not do the right thing? So if I was the president and I was visiting Hiroshima, would I fucking apologize for it? Fuck yeah, I'd apologize for it. See, what people don't understand is whether the action was right or wrong, you can still apologize for it. Why? Over 100,000 civilians were killed instantly. Women, children, maybe you didn't hear me. I said innocent people were killed. Like that. If you can't apologize for that, your fucking moral compass is broken. Again, divorcing the conversation about whether or not it was right or wrong, and that is something that is debatable, and historians have debated it, and they continue to debate it today. But putting that conversation aside, even if you are on team, we had to do it. 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 You can still fucking apologize. Why? Because any normal, moral human being with a functioning brain goes, you know, if you kill over 100,000 civilians, perhaps that merits an apology. If anybody else does it, immediately they're a rogue nation, they're a terror state, they're bad people, they're evil, they're immoral, they're backwards. But when we kill 100,000 civilians, not only is there rationalization, also years later, we say, our liberal Democratic president says, well, we can't apologize, don't be crazy. When we kill over 100,000 civilians, we go in there and we show ourselves and that's enough. Isn't that enough for you? Now you need me to say, I'm sorry I killed women and children and babies. I apologize for that. Yeah, you should fucking do it because it's the right fucking thing. And the right wing is going to attack you anyway. So do the right thing and then have them attack you. And then when they attack you, they'll look even more ridiculous. See, the fundamental weakness of Obama is caving to the right and buying into their framing. Why are you buying into their framing? If their framing is, no, you never apologize to anybody, even if you kill over 100,000 civilians, then they're idiots. They're stupid people. Never mind the fact that they're immoral. Why would you buy into their framing? Their framing sucks. Their framing is stupid. I'm embarrassed by their framing. I'm embarrassed that their framing is part of this fucking country. And what do you do? I'm going to give in to that. I'll go, but I'll not apologize. Go the next step. Why don't you? Just go the next step. Pull a Trump or something. Show up to Hiroshima. Go, maybe you had it coming. How about that? Maybe it's good that over 100,000 civilians died. There, I said it to your face. How about that? Yet again, they think stupidity is strength. Let me be a jackass, and that's strong. No, you're just a jackass. And Obama caves into that and meets them halfway, which means Obama is a half jackass. Okay. I got a little mad there. I did. That annoys me, man. Could you imagine we had 100,000 civilians get killed in a split second here in the U.S., and then the leader of that country 7 decades later comes here and refuses to say, you know what, right or wrong, my bad, our bad. A country sends an official apology. We love you guys now. Those times are behind us. But our bad. God forbid. Like an adult, you do that. You know what adults do when some fucked up shit happens? They go, I'm sorry. I'm an adult. I'm sorry. Okay. All right, let me take a break. When we come back, oh, God, I got a horrendous story about foreign policy for you. I might go off again. I don't want to, but I might. And then the Christian radio host focusing on the serious issues, gay cartoon characters. What are we going to do? What are we going to do with these people? All right, stay right there. We'll be right back with all that stuff and much more. Guys, I got four more here. We'll get through them and then we'll call it a day, skis. Perhaps I'll be done early today, but every time I say that, that's not the case, so let me shut her up. All right. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening in Yemen. So we got the news this week that we have another U.S. intervention happening. Did you hear this on CNN or in the mainstream media? I certainly didn't. I had to see it in an article here. Obama has apparently decided to intervene in Yemen. The small number of U.S. military personnel are on the ground inside Yemen as part of the effort to root out al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the Pentagon said Friday. Okay, so first of all, you can't do that. You can't just do it. Obama has repeatedly intervened in various countries without any congressional approval. And then what they do is they just hang it on an old George W. Bush era authorization. So they say, I don't know, anybody who is in al-Qaeda, not in al-Qaeda, a jihadist, not a jihadist, part of the same group, part of a different group, or anybody who we think is kind of an enemy of us, whatever, we're just going to attack them. So think about it, man. If a Republican president did this, we'd all scream he's a fascist. He just invaded Yemen. He's like, okay, we're just going to go into Yemen now. What? That's, no nation should just have the ability to, process, laws, procedures, congressional approval, the UN, all that stuff. Fuck it. Let's get this out of the way. I'm just going to go. So if you give a shit about rule of law, you should be annoyed by this. But then on top of that, Obama's intervened in Afghanistan. He's intervened in Iraq. He's intervened in Syria. He's intervened in Yemen. Pakistan, Libya, Somalia. So the list keeps growing and growing. And you ready for this? Now here's my favorite part of the story, which comes in the form of an investigative report from Reuters, which came out last month. They say, quote, al-Qaeda's emergence is the most striking unintended consequence of the Saudi-led military intervention in Yemen. The campaign, backed by the United States, has helped al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula to become stronger than at any time since it first emerged almost 20 years ago. So do you understand what that means? We fund them, and then we turn around and fight them. So let's understand how the money gets transferred here. So the U.S., in a variety of different weapons deals and things of that nature, that we arm and we fund Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia turns around, and they arm and they fund militant Sunnis on the ground to fight the Houthi Shias who overtook the government recently. And some of the people who are being funded by Saudi Arabia include al-Qaeda. So they're using our weapons and our money on the ground to fight the Houthis in Yemen. And now we look at what's happening in Yemen and we go, oh shit, al-Qaeda is now strong there. Now we got to go in and we got to fight al-Qaeda. So it's only one level removed. You give the shit to Saudi. Saudi gives it to al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda fights Yemen on the ground. Al-Qaeda fights, the Shia Houthis on the ground, and then we go in and we fight al-Qaeda. Our foreign policy may be the dumbest on the planet. And what this reminds me of is what's happening in Syria now, too. We covered the story a while back. You have CIA-backed Syrians fighting Pentagon-backed Syrians. We're on two sides of the same war at the same time. Guys, there is no argument to do this. There is no argument. Stop arming Saudi Arabia. Stop giving them weapons and money. By the way, they're massacring civilians in Yemen, over 50% civilian death rate. They're attacking schools for the blind and stuff like that. Stop arming Saudi Arabia, and then you'll have them. They can't get our money and our weapons and then fund al-Qaeda, so al-Qaeda dries up, their support dries up, or their weapons at least dry up on the ground, and then we wouldn't have to go in and fight al-Qaeda. And then again, you want to talk about moral confusion. What the fuck are we doing in Syria right now? Well, some of the groups that we're arming are directly aligned with al-Qaeda, and you don't think they're giving them weapons? When you look at the rebel factions today, one of their biggest rebel fighting groups against Assad is al-Nusra. Al-Nusra is al-Qaeda in Syria. You know who else is arming al-Nusra and protecting them? The Turkish government, one of our top allies. So we're arming people who are arming al-Qaeda in Yemen, and then we fight al-Qaeda there. And then now also in Syria, we're arming people and funding people who are funding al-Qaeda. And then we're kind of on their side because we're against Assad too. So if they topple Assad, great. But then we're also against them because they're Al-Qaeda. So we're in every way, shape, and form, we're too entangled. And, of course, we have Hillary Clinton who wants to get us more involved in the Middle East and in the world. And we have Donald Trump who half the time wants to get us more involved as well. Great place we're at, man. Yeah, Bernie is so wrong when he says we should mind our business and get out of everybody's way. What a crazy position that is. Okay. Let's go to time to cut loose and cover some idiots. A fundamentalist radio host. How about that? We'll do one loose story and then we'll get serious again. So there's a campaign online to make Elsa, a Disney character in the movie Frozen, gay in the upcoming sequel. And conservative radio host Kevin Swanson is not happy about this, so let's see what he has to say.
Anybody who opposes the homosexualizing of the kids is shamed for it and has been shamed, and very few people have stood against the homosexualizing of children in K-6 schools in Douglas County, Colorado, or anywhere else where the GLSEN program is constantly being pushed.
So are you saying that you've taken flack for this?
Well, all you need to do to prove the point that anybody who opposes the homosexualizing of the kids' agenda is shamed, all you need to do is check out Kevin Swanson and the word Frozen on your Google search. And you'll see that there is somebody who attempted it. I tested it. I know it. Anybody who has the guts to stand up against the homosexualizing of kids in the present day will be shamed for it. And that means that the homosexualizing of kids will be, I think, wholesale happening across this country in the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. Of course, Elsa is going to get her girlfriend eventually. That's the way you destroy sexuality. That's the way you destroy an entire civilization. The entire social system of the United States of America is collapsing. But in order for the system to collapse, you've got to be sure that the destruction maintains a cross-generational vision. You've got to be sure that you have homosexualized 4-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 8-year-olds and 10-year-olds in order to destroy a civilization, because the destruction of a civilization happens over 2 or 3 or maybe 4 generations max. In order to bring a civilization down, you've got to homosexualize the kids.
You nailed it, man. That's what Disney's doing. How can we bring down America? Maybe if we make a cartoon character that's gay. That'll do it. Brilliant idea. Somebody get this guy a raise. What are you saying? So let's stop and think about this rationally for a second. I'm like this maniac. Why would you make a character gay in a Disney movie? Well, sane people might come away with the conclusion that you're trying to teach tolerance and acceptance, and to let kids know, who can honestly be vicious tribalists, you're letting them know, like, okay, just because somebody's different from you, hey, if they have different color skin, if they have a different religion or background, if they have a different sexual orientation, that doesn't mean they're evil. So, hey, here's a very popular character, and it turns out the character's gay. Well, you just created a whole generation of kids that are accepting and tolerant of lifestyles that may not be exactly like theirs. But in this guy's lunatic mind, he goes, no, they're doing it because they're trying to make the kids gay. Never in human history has a kid watched a cartoon that happened to have a gay character, and little Bobby turned to mommy and daddy and said, I'd really like to suck Johnny's ballsack. That doesn't happen. You're not turning them gay. You are not turning them gay. When I have seen gay characters on TV or elsewhere, gay people in real life, I wasn't struck with a sudden urge to give hand jobs. I want, oh, all of a sudden now I'm really sexually attracted to the same gender. That's not how it works! That's not how it works! You're kind of attracted to what you're attracted to, but again, this tells you so much about this guy, Kevin Swanson. Because this has been his main issue. All he does is talk about this. All he does is talk about gay people, and he can't help himself. Why? Because he's repressing those urges himself. So he said it. He's like, what you're trying to do is you're trying to destroy a civilization, destroy a country, and destroy sexuality. Now, how can that make sense? Let's try to, you know, put ourselves, again, in his backwards mind here for a second. How would that comment make sense? Because to us, that's like out of nowhere. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Well, he thinks you'll destroy a civilization, you'll destroy a country if you start, in his mind, promoting homosexuality. Why? Because he thinks, well, all it's going to take for these kids to start being gay is for you to promote it. See, he doesn't think that it's just teaching tolerance and acceptance and not every kid is going to turn gay because not every kid is gay. He thinks once you promote it, everybody's going to want to only have sex with the same gender and only marry the same gender. Why? Because that's what I want. The only thing that's preventing me from doing it is society and the judgment and the shame of other evangelical fundamentalist Christians. If you remove that, oh my God, are you kidding me? I want to swim in a pool of dicks. That's what I'm about all day long. That's how this guy thinks. He thinks, oh, putting a gay character in a Disney movie, that destroys sexuality. No, it doesn't. Your sexuality is what it is. If you're gay, you're gay. If you're straight, you're straight. If you're bi, you're bi. That just is what it is. But in his mind, no. We all have that gay urge. And the moral people fight it off. And when Disney says it's okay to be gay, that's given the green light. And now everybody's going to want to marry the same gender. Look at these people. That's not how we think. That's how you think. It's so sad. You're wearing it on your sleeve. You're gayer than Doogie Howser in a field full of dicks. Go put on some assless chaps. Go jump in the gay pride parade because that's who you really are. Stop being a hate-filled idiot. Okay. All right, two more. And we are going to finish early. Yippee skippy, yay! Sarah Burris of Raw Story is reporting on a heartbreaking story about the dangers of faith-based healing. So this is about a 26-year-old kid named Alex Jacobson, and they report the following. He was suffering from mental exhaustion and anxiety. He hadn't slept for days despite being in a faith-based treatment program. He felt hopeless, and when he spotted a box knife, he grabbed it and held it against his neck, pressing harder as it cut through his skin. So he attempted suicide. They continue. This all happened 10 days after he stopped taking his medication, which was when he entered himself into the faith-based program. He said he trusted his recovery to them and to God, and he almost died from it. The free discipleship program he checked himself into is run by two Assembly of God pastors who hope to heal their patients of addiction, anxiety, anger, depression, and the emotional residue left by mental, physical, and sexual abuse by using prayer, scripture, memorization, and developing a closer relationship with God. Okay, not only are these people wrong, what they are doing is profoundly dangerous. That's not an answer. It's not empirically true. It is not correct that you can heal people via scripture memorization, prayer, and developing a closer relationship with God. So you, my friends, are con men. See, this is something it's always gotten under my skin, whether we're talking about faith-based healing or we're talking about New Age alternative medicine. By the way, if anything is called alternative medicine and you want to use it, run away. Because there's a reason it's called alternative medicine, because it didn't make the cut to just call it medicine. If it was actually medicine, they'd just call it medicine. But it's alternative. Why? Because it doesn't work. It's not real. So, you know, I've had personal experience with this, not me, but my family. I've told the story before on air. A lot of people may not know this, but chiropractors, there's a whole voodoo pseudoscience angle to it where they say it's based on a science of, I think it's vertebral or vertebral subluxation, which means every illness and every problem you have is caused by the fact that your back isn't straight. If we straighten out your back by cracking it, well, then guess what? You're never going to get sick. You're never going to get a virus. You're never going to get a disease. This is how you heal everything, by cracking the back and making the spine straight. Okay, that's bullshit. That's hooey. That's not true. We know what causes viruses and diseases and all these things, and it ain't that. But there are some people who are still purists in that sense, where they're a chiropractor, and they go, no, totally science. It's not. It's not science. They're glorified back crackers. Now, if you go to them and you think, I know I'm going to it for what it is, I just want to get my back cracked, okay, fine. If you treat it like a massage therapist, fine, that's fine. Then you know what it is and you go. But oftentimes they portray themselves as more than that, and they'll show you fake x-rays of, here's your spine, and it's literally a spine that's like, you know, squiggly, like a line, and I'm sorry, like a bent, like a curve. And they go, oh, see, now you got to come for more sessions, because I'm going to fix you, this is going to heal you. Well, my father was having back pain, okay? And he did not have insurance. So what did he do? Well, it's cheaper if I just go to the chiropractor and I hear good things. I hear they're actually doctors and they know medicine. And if I go and tell him my problems, he'll tell me the solution. So he went to this person. The guy, oh, you got to come back. We'll fix it. Just keep cracking the back. He came back session after session after session. Eventually, he had to go to the emergency room and go to the hospital. Why? That pain he felt in his back was a tumor. It was too late. Died soon thereafter at age 56. If the fucking chiropractor told him from day one, dude, look, this is above my pay grade. I'm just a back cracker. You got to go to a real doctor. You got problems. He would have went. So it is a little personal to me, but I'm also able to be objective about it and to realize alternative medicine is just bullshit. Whether it's in that form or it's in the form of faith-based treatment, it ain't real. It's not real. It's not, if you have serious issues with anxiety or depression or addiction or all that stuff, it's not from lack of will. You're not suffering, oh, my God, I got to pray to God and they'll treat me and I'll be better if I just memorize scripture. No, that is stupid. That does not help. What helps is going to actual doctors who have actual cures. So, for example, I have a friend of mine who, his father, over time, had gotten addicted to pain pills. And, tried different ways of quitting, couldn't quit. Probably tried stuff like this, too. Oh, it's a test of will. Pray, do this, that. Never worked. Turns out when you go to a real doctor, the real doctor goes, oh, I actually have something that can treat you. So pills, I guess, where it fills the opiate receptors in your brain that you've gotten addicted to, but without giving you the high. So you could take the pill, it fills the opiate receptors, so you don't feel like you're in withdrawal, you don't feel like you're in pain, and you don't need to take the drug. Mission accomplished. There's another thing, alcoholics. There's a pill that makes it so that when an alcoholic snaps and they decide, I'm going to go on a drinking spree, well, they've been taking a pill that makes it so you just throw up like a madman if you drink the alcohol. That's a good way to stop them from drinking the alcohol. Now, that one's a little different because they might still have the urge. I think with the pill for the opiate addiction, you don't have the urge anymore, if I'm not mistaken. But, with the pill that stops you from drinking, that's actual science. It's empirically true that if you start drinking, you will throw up. Well, there's going to be a large percentage of people that when they take that pill, even if they're alcoholics, they're going to stay away from the alcohol. So there are real ways, real scientific ways to treat you. Depression, we just spoke about it the other day, whether it's SSRIs or whether we're talking about, the new class of now there's ketamine treatment for depression, and it works. There's very good signs moving forward. These are things that actually help. People who are charlatans, who are con men, pretending to have answers when they don't, that's not the way to go. And it's dangerous when people use alternative medicine and they use faith-based medicine. None of it is true. Believe the real doctors with the actual degrees. There's always help for you somewhere out there. But it's just not going to be from the people who are saying it's in religion, because it's not. That's not where the answer is. And it's not going to be from the people who have escaped all regulation magically and they say, we're alternative medicine. No, you're not. You're bullshit artists. That's what you are. Okay. More. Final story of the day. Heartbreaking story in Pakistan. RT has a heartbreaking story about an honor killing that happened in Pakistan. They say tribal elders in Pakistan have been arrested for ordering the brutal murder of a 16-year-old girl who helped a couple elope. The girl was bound and burned to death in the vehicle used for the escape. The murder happened last week in the town of Dunga Gali, northeast of the capital, Islamabad. The so-called honor killing was ordered by the elders as punishment after the victim helped a couple from the nearby village of Makul. The couple violated cultural norms when they ran off together, and the elders saw the 16-year-old's participation in the act as causing irreparable damage to the village's reputation. This is the height of irony. I've never seen anything more ironic in my entire life. These idiot tribal elders are like, you know, they've harmed the reputation of the village because people ran off and got married and eloped. So now to fix the honor and our village's reputation, I will now brutally murder a 16-year-old girl. No, you have it exactly backwards. The brutally murdering of the 16-year-old girl destroyed your village's honor and reputation. The people eloping, nobody gives a flying fuck about. People all around the world are looking at this. They would have never, I would have never heard the story of them eloping. And by the way, if I heard it, I would have said, oh, okay, I don't give a fuck. People doing what they want to do. They're not hurting anybody else. That would have been fine. But now with this, I go, these are bad people. Like, you're a bad person. This is a bad society. This is a bad cultural practice. This links into a bigger debate. And I've told you guys from day one, I'm not a cultural relativist. So I believe that liberal values are indeed superior values. It's not just different when you have a society that says, for example, hey, free speech is a right. You can say whatever you want. And, you know, we're not going to lock you in a cage because you insulted somebody. That's not just a different society. On that issue, it is better than societies that say, I'm going to lock you up because you offended me or you insulted me. Okay, that means liberal values are superior on that front. I would argue in other areas we have answers too. Healthcare, having a universal single-payer healthcare system, yes, a socialist healthcare system, is superior to a capitalist system. So I don't believe there's some people on the left who would say, you know, hey, bro, they do it differently over there and whatnot, bro. So, like, who are you to judge when they do it that way and we do it this way? And nobody's to say that it's better. It's just different. So, like, don't be close-minded. That's just how they live. I never bought that argument. I think that argument is stupid because then all moral judgments are out the window. So how can you say then, how can that person say, bro, don't judge them. It's just a different culture. Then, and that person will turn around in the U.S. and say, oh, Republicans are goddamn fascists. No, because you can use the same argument you just used against that, too. What do you mean? The culture of Mississippi Republicans and treating black people like shit and second-class citizens, who are you to judge? That's just how they are, man. What do you mean? Don't be a bigot by calling out their bigotry. No, they're the fucking bigots, and I'm going to call it out. Murdering 16-year-old girls for helping somebody elope, that's fucking stupid, and I'm going to call it out. You destroyed your own honor. You destroyed your own reputation. You're a bunch of old morons who are savages, and you are immoral, and you are brutal, and you're the problem, not the poor 16-year-old girl. If you all embodied her values more, you'd be better off. More people should help people escape and live a better life. If this is the kind of society we're talking about, that little girl's a fucking hero now. You know who's not? The dumbass tribal elders who are so sure that they're right that they'll murder. Oh, my reputation has been harmed, so I must murder a 16-year-old girl. No, that's what harmed your reputation, you jackass. And all cultures are not equal. There are things that we have real answers on this planet. It is objectively true and empirically correct that Hitler was a bad dude, that his value system was fucked up and brought nothing but misery and harm to the planet, not happiness and pleasure and joy. So we can make moral judgments, and I'm fucking judging you. You're the problem, not this poor girl. All right, I'm out of time, guys. Whew. 5 minutes left in the show, but we're out of stories. What do you know? Isn't that crazy? That's very rare in secular talk history that we run out of stories before the show's up. Usually I'm talking as I hear the countdown in my ear and I still have like a story or two left. But that'll do it. So, love all of you. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. Obviously, a zillion YouTube videos will be uploaded accordingly today. We'll see you there. I got nothing else for you. Mwah. Peace.